Get ready.
Every dinosaur statue you've ever seen or a skeleton is made from ground up chicken bones from China.
To question everything.
Yeah, she told me that.
I'm so sorry.
Okay.
What do you believe?
As I was looking around, it looked like an extraterrestrial starship. I mean, it felt like it was a starship.
And why do you believe it?
I do, based on my belief in scripture, I do believe that there is some sort of eternal consequence, or you could even say eternal punishment.
This is Unquestionable with Calvin Smith. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Unquestionable with Calvin Smith. I am your host, Calvin Smith. I think I'm the only guy that does this. Today, I'm joined by a really special guest. I always say that my guests are special, and I think they're starting to get a little offended by it, but they are. They're all special for coming on and talking to me. But today, I'm joined by J.D. Sword, and J.D. is a member of the Church of Satan and is the host of the Devil in the Details podcast and is a writer for Skeptical Inquirer magazine and AIPT Comics. JD examines mysteries surrounding claims of the supernatural and diabolical and provides a skeptical analysis of pop culture references to the infernal. His focus is on historical and contemporary cases of exorcism and demonic possession, the history and practice of superstition, magic, and witchcraft, as well as urban legends and conspiracy theories related to pseudo-Satanism and devil worship. Everything related to JD Sword will be linked in the description of this podcast. But with that, let's welcome my guest for today, JD. So welcome, JD, to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. That was a lovely intro.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm trying out something new. You know, I used to just kind of say, hey, welcome to the show. This is my guest. But, you know, I figured I'd try something new with the past couple and actually read the bio to my guest so that they can correct me if I said anything wrong. So figured I'd try something new. But yeah, so JD, we haven't been talking for too long, and as we were kind of talking before the show, this is going to be a bit of a learning episode for me, because so you're a member of the Church of Satan. We've already kind of cleared that up, and I'm not super familiar with Satanism or Luciferianism or, you know, the Church of Satan. And I'm sure some of my audience may have some misconceptions about what you may believe or not believe. So I figured this is just going to kind of be a learning episode. We're just going to get a feel of who JD is and what exactly he believes. So I guess with that, just tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me a little bit about the church and what exactly being a member of the Church of Satan means.
Sure. First, I should probably throw out the disclaimer that I'm a member of the Church of Satan, but I'm not a spokesperson for the Church of Satan. So anything that you're getting from me, it's either objectively based on facts. You know, you can go to the Church of Satan's website. They have a very extensive frequently asked questions page and pretty much any kind of other resources for information that you'd want. Besides that, you know, it's going to be my personal opinion, and I'll try to express when it is such.
Of course.
So I joined in 2018. I think it's been 4 years.
Okay.
And that was around the same time that I became a member of the Center for Inquiry and started getting more actively involved in the skeptic community, because to me, what attracted me to Satanism was a lot of the same things that I found interesting about skepticism. You know, you had figures like James Randi that were very heavily involved in exposing frauds and charlatans. And, you know, there's a certain sense of doubt that you have to be a scientific skeptic. And it's not always the case that, you know, people have ill intent or, you know, trying to actively manipulate or con people. Mm-hmm. But in many historical cases, that's been the case. So to me, one of the kind of central elements of the character of the devil, Satan, if you go back to the original Hebrew, was the accuser, the adversary. So to me, the kind of challenging of claims that you see in the skeptic community really seem to coincide with that particular kind of interpretation of Satan that you get with the religion of Satanism. So probably one of the most popular misconceptions is Satanism means devil worship.
Right.
And that's about as true as being a Buddhist means worshiping Buddha. You know, Satanism is an atheistic religion. It was founded in 1966 by Anton Zander LaVey, and it has always been atheistic. And that's something that LaVey was very clear about on multiple occasions. The character of Satan is merely a metaphor or a symbol for what we consider to be the truth about human nature. And we see him as more of a figure for pride and individualism and liberty.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess just to be clear, you don't believe in the physical being that is Satan. Like, you don't believe that Satan exists, do you?
No, okay. Absolutely not.
Okay, great. I think that's a big, arguably the biggest misconception about Satanism is that Satanists worship Satan, you know, like the actual deity Satan. I think that's the only thing that I really know about Satanism is that they don't actually worship Satan. So glad we cleared the air right out of the gate. So I bet you that's going to wake a couple people up. Cause I mean, that kind of caught me off guard too. When I learned that, I was like, okay, so it's atheism with extra steps, you know, that's kind of how I looked at it. So
it's atheism with flourish, but you know, like the thing about atheism is that's just purely a negative stance. You know, it's asserting what you don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that absence of religion is necessarily the answer in every case. You know, there are functions that religion serves, you know, emotionally, societally, fraternally, that as we've seen, you know, when you kind of strip all that away, there's something that a lot of people are kind of left wanting. Mm-hmm. And within the atheist and humanist community, you see a lot of times people trying to come up with like atheist holidays and kind of symbols that can kind of stand in for religious symbolism.
Right.
And I think one of the key insights that Anton LaVey had that really put him ahead of his time was that, you know, religion has those important functions, but it doesn't necessarily have to be based on fantasy. You know, there's nothing that says you can't have a religion that's based on material reality. So,
gotcha. You know,
the pageantry, the symbolism, the ritual and everything that comes along with that, you know, it's theatrical psychodrama that kind of, you know, when you step into it, when you step into the ritual chamber, you know, when you embrace the symbolism and the metaphor, you know, it can exercise that kind of fantasy element.
Hmm.
But you're not deceiving yourself into believing that the devil's real or that you're, you know, conjuring demons for real.
Okay. So what, I guess that kind of leads me to my next question is do you go to like an actual church? Like an actual Church of Satan? Okay.
No, the Church of Satan is more like a cabal. It's an association of individuals who identify with Satanism as it was codified by Anton LaVey.
Gotcha.
And you know, there's an official Facebook group, and then there's a private Facebook group that's just for active members. You know, so people can communicate with one another and kind of share thoughts, share projects. But no, there's no physical building that we go to. Once in a great while, they'll host events where Satanists can choose to attend for like special occasions. You know, there was a 50th anniversary back in 2006 that a lot of people attended. Unfortunately, I wasn't a member at the time, so I didn't get a chance to. But yeah, no, there's no physical meeting, no physical meeting place, no congregating.
Okay. So do you do any, like, I guess, what is the day in the life of a member of the Church of Satan look like? Oh, I mean, do you do, I mean, like, do you do any type of quote unquote prayer, or, you know, I guess rituals like you were kind of mentioning?
Yeah. Prayer is kind of apprehensive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's passively waiting for something to happen, petitioning right. someone. Some Satanists might perform rituals depending on, you know, what it is that's going on in their lives that they hope to achieve. I mean, there's no kind of daily schedule or anything that anybody has to follow. It's a very individualistic religion. It's about how you apply the principles to your daily life. So, you know, for me personally, depending on the day, I'm getting up at 3:30 in the morning to go to work, and in my free time I'm working on putting out the newsletter for Skeptical Inquirer, The Morning Heresy, which I was very happy, like I volunteered for that, and I was very happy that they accepted my contribution to it, because I was like, look, it's absolutely hilarious to have a Satanist putting out something called The Morning Heresy. Like, I don't care what you want me to do. It's worth it for that joke alone.
Right.
Or I'm working on articles for my Skeptical Inquirer column, The Devil in the Details, or working on material for a podcast episode. So a lot of reading, a lot of writing, work in between. So, you know, for me, applying Satanism isn't so much about actively doing rituals and ritual magic. It's more so immersing myself in the material, kind of gaining knowledge historically about witchcraft phenomena and the mm-hmm. history of exorcism, things like that. You know, those are things that I've always been very fascinated with, and it's kind of what led me into Satanism to begin with.
Okay. Interesting. So I do want to come back to that. Just one very, it may not be a quick thing, but just for clarification again, I understand that there's a difference between Satanism and Luciferianism. And so I guess you would identify as more a Satanist, I guess. So I guess for those that may not quite understand that there is a difference between the two, could you maybe take a minute or two to maybe explain to the best of your ability what the difference is?
So Luciferianism is one of those religions that people either like to call themselves Luciferian or theistic Satanist, and that's a term that's picked up a lot by certain academics as well when they write about Satanism. You know, they try to portray it as a religion with lots of different offshoots. You know, so you have the atheistic or the Levian Satanists over here, and then you have theistic Satanists and Luciferians over here. But I disagree with that, with the way that's kind of broken down. For the reason that it's not analogous to sects or divisions within a mm-hmm. given religion. So, you know, for example, a lot of people would probably think in Christianity you have Catholics and you have Protestants. But the thing with that is those two groups, you know, yes, they have very distinct doctrinal differences, but they still acknowledge a common literature, a common founder. You know, there's a common history that they share.
Right, right.
Whereas, you know, with Satanism, it begins with the founding of the Church of Satan in 1966. and the publishing of the Satanic Bible in 1969. You know, that's kind of the origin from which everything else that tries to portray itself as Satanism in the world of the occult kind of comes forward. And a lot of those groups don't recognize Anton LaVey as a founder, or, you know, they might say something to the effect of, you know, yeah, he, you know, he had some good ideas and he certainly kind of put his mark on it, but, you know, he was a sexist old guy. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to associate with him. We're beyond all that.
Right.
So, you know, I would say theistic Satanism is a contradiction in terms. It's an oxymoron in that Satanism as a religion was founded as an atheistic religion. You know, if you literally believe, if you believe in a literal Satan, you're just a heretical Christian, because you can't believe in the devil without believing in God. And even if you think that, you know, I don't know, the book got it wrong and the devil's actually going to be the one that comes out on top, you still have to believe in, you know, the opposing force against him. So, you know, how does that make you different than a Christian who's just rooting for the other side?
That is true. Yeah, that is true. I, for some reason, never even looked at it that way. Like, yeah, obviously, if you believe in the devil, then you have to believe in God too. Durr. That's funny. Yeah, it's like that's that old tire beam, you know, like it's like the video where you see if people saying, you know, Satanists believe in Satan, say, no, you know, we don't believe in Satan. Oh, well, who do you call people who do? Christians.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
It's pretty funny. Yeah. Okay, cool. So Luciferians are basically Satanists that believe in the physical being of Satan. And
well, I wouldn't even say that they're Satanists. I would say they are heretical Christians.
Okay.
You believe in a literal being, whether you choose to personify it as Satan or Lucifer, you know, because I think their shtick is they identify more with Lucifer as kind of the light bringer, the you know, giver of wisdom, which to some extent, you know, I identify with in the way that I apply Satanism. You know, to me, the idea of wisdom kind of unclouded by belief, and having the kind of doubt to question all things and not just accept it as a matter of faith. You know, yeah, I definitely can see that and can identify with it, but it doesn't mean that I believe that there's a literal Lucifer that's, you know, kind of the personification of that. Okay. So yeah, I wouldn't even call them Satanists. Satanism is you're an atheist, but you identify with the figure of Satan. You identify with the literature as put out by Anton LaVey.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna be doing a lot of reading up on Satanism after this, because now I'm really interested. Yeah, I guess. So cool. Glad that we cleared that up. I guess now we'll kind of jump back to where we were before, talking about kind of the, you know, exorcisms and the supernatural. So do you believe that exorcisms and I guess the paranormal exists?
I don't believe that it exists in the active sense. You know, I don't safeguard myself.
Bit vague of a question.
Yeah. But I don't, you know, in the same way that I don't believe that God exists, you know, I'm not making an epistemic assertion, but I don't actively live my life under the assumption that the supernatural exists. You know, I don't try to safeguard myself from curses or anything like that. You know, in fact, I very often get chastised by my mom for, you know, kind of having all of the diabolical imagery and whatnot in my house for fear that it's going to let something in. And I'm like, well, you know, that would be awesome. Like, but, you know, to have actual proof that, you know, demons are real and something like that. Like, what a scientific discovery.
That's what I'm saying. Like, please give me the curse.
Yeah. Like, if anybody's going to be possessed, it should be me, you know, not some 8-year-old, you know, 8-year-old girl, but No, I don't actively believe in any of that. I think it's all misdiagnosis of legitimate medical problems, or, you know, neurological issues.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty much in that same boat. So that kind of leads me then to, but about your podcast, The Devil in the Details. So I understand on your podcast, you kind of do similar to what I do here, to where you kind of investigate certain claims and supernatural phenomena and such, and try to get to the bottom of what the heck happened. Kind of similar to how I used to do this show at the very beginning, mm-hmm. But now I'm more so interview based. But yeah, tell me a bit about your podcast and what, you know, you do on there. I understand your podcast episodes are usually pretty short too, so it's not like you have to sit there forever.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of short.
Yeah.
A lot of the episodes in the beginning were like 45 minutes to an hour long, just because I wanted to try to be as comprehensive as possible, you know. In more recent episodes, I've kind of had to dial it back just because I have so many other things that I'm doing at the same time. You know, I haven't had time to dig in. Yeah, I haven't had time to really dig into an issue and really kind of extensively explore it. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it, when I first started out, my immediate interest was I really wanted to do episodes talking about the Satanic Panic of the 1980s and 90s.
Yeah.
So, you know, covering the individuals and the literature that spurred that on, and the cases that, you know, like the court cases and stuff that really made that famous. And of course, that led into talking about the science behind memory and, you know, repressed memories versus false memories. And, you know, from there, it was kind of the, you know, the next thing that I knew I wanted to do was exorcism, because there's so many historical cases on exorcism. And, you know, I think probably one of the most popular that I've done, which was featured in the print magazine for Skeptical Inquirer, was the case that inspired the movie and the book The Exorcist. And that one was interesting because there was so much information out there, but to kind of find the real truth behind it, like the real good investigative reporting, you really had to dig, because nobody seemed interested in, you know, reporting the truth. So the information had been out there for decades, but it was just a matter of going to go look for it and find it, you know, and finding it in these kind of obscure little places and bringing it out to, you know, a more popular audience.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's, you know, getting to the bottom of what the heck happened, you know, because a lot of people will, when they're doing their own research, and I was guilty of this for the longest time, you search for things that, you know, confirmation bias, these things that are going to confirm what you want to be true. So I like that you are taking the skeptical route. You're searching for the answers, not for a particular answer, just a answer. So that's refreshing.
And I mean, that can be hard. You know, I wouldn't say that I'm not guilty of that, you know. They're very
Everyone's guilty of it. Yeah.
You know, there have been some times where I did come to a conclusion that I didn't expect, or I found more information. Like, for example, I did an episode on kind of the science behind ritual magic, and a lot of that kind of crossed over to parapsychology, and there was a lot more like solid experimental research on that topic than I expected. You know, if all you ever kind of hear or see are folks like James Randi, you know, talking about how parapsychologists are dummies, you know, it's all bunk.
Yep.
You kind of close yourself off to, well, you know, what's kind of been going on in the past, you know, 10, 20 years, like where does it stand today? And I'm not trying to, you know, I don't want that to be mistaken as, you know, like, I personally, I don't believe the conclusion that psychic, you know, psychic powers exist or anything like that. But at the same time, I think that there's enough interesting results that are being put forward that, you know, in a perfect world, it would be great to have skeptics and, you know, parapsychologists kind of get together and really kind of examine this at length.
In a perfect world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know that nobody's ever going to have time for that. And, you know, of course, there's the problem of conflicting personalities and everything. Yep. But I definitely think that there's enough evidence out there that really needs to be examined critically. You know, we shouldn't just be blithely dismissing it offhand as, well, it hasn't ever been proven, therefore it never will, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that we shouldn't just, you know, brush things off. You know, if a claim is presented like, hey, I have this evidence for ghosts or, you know, the paranormal or whatever, it shouldn't be, hey, we, you know, push that guy aside, forget that, you know, ghosts aren't real or whatever. We should accept it and try, you know, to find the answer for it. And if we don't know the answer for it, you know, say, I don't know, don't claim ghosts.
Yeah.
I think that's the big problem too, is a lot of, you know, the paranormal investigators and such, that it's a lot of, you know, I've noticed that's a lot of arguments from, ignorance. They just, I don't know, therefore it has to be a ghost.
Right.
You know, but I think that I wouldn't say a lot of paranormal investigators, but some paranormal investigators do have some evidence that is genuinely interesting and should be looked at a little further, rather than just brushed off. So I agree with you that, we need to kind of open our minds a little bit and be a little bit more accepting, be, you know, willing to change our minds, I guess. And that's a lot of what I try to do here is, you know, be open-minded. Maybe a guest on here can change your mind. Maybe it'll strengthen your stance that you're in already. Who knows? But you don't know until you ask the questions. So
yeah, exactly.
So I guess going off of ghosts and stuff, I guess I would assume you don't really believe in ghosts, do you? Because I mean, that would kind of have to assume that you believe in some sort of afterlife.
Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, one could believe in something along the lines of like stone tape theory, where there's a somewhat scientific explanation that doesn't have to preclude a belief in an afterlife, you know, but no, I don't believe it. I think consciousness is, as well as we understand it, is most likely just brain-based phenomena. And I think, you know, once someone dies, and that's, you know, a very difficult thing to ascertain, you know, asking that question, you know, and kind of coming up with a definition of what does it truly mean to be dead, you know, I think once the brain pretty much stops functioning, that's it, you know.
Yeah, you know, death itself is a process, but, you know, once you're dead, you're dead, you know, like it's once stuff stops working, you're dead. You know, there's no dying for 3 days and then coming back and then flying up to heaven. Like,
no, not truly dying. No.
Like some people say happened. It's in a book, therefore it happened. anyways, yeah. So super interesting stuff. Is there any other misconceptions about Satanism that maybe you might want to clarify in case someone, I don't know, because I hear a lot of misconceptions about atheism and Christianity, I mean, all around the board. And so, I mean, what's something besides the, you know, you believing in a literal Satan, what's something that you hear pretty commonly about, you know, people telling you what you believe?
I mean, I don't have too many people coming at me. I'm not exactly secretive about my affiliation, but it's more a matter of, you know, if it's not within the skeptic community, I kind of fly under the radar, so people tend not to bother me.
Yeah.
I would say probably one of the other big misconceptions that I've seen over time and continue to see, and I think it's important to address, especially in today's kind of climate, is, you know, Satanists do not sacrifice babies. we don't harm children. We don't harm animals.
Okay, yeah, and that's a good one to clarify because
it's explicitly so. It's right there in the Satanic Bible that, you know, no Satanist would ever harm an animal or baby. But, you know, that kind of charge has been around for, you know, thousands of years. I mean, Norman, the historian Norman Cohn wrote a fantastic book called Europe's Inner Demons that, you know, shows when Christianity was still kind of a fledgling religion, when it kind of started to be its own separate thing and not just kind of a wacky offshoot of Judaism. You know, the Romans accused the early Christians of sacrificing babies.
Mm-hmm.
Then when, you know, Christianity became the official religion of Rome and Christianity started having its own kind of inner disputes and sects forming, they would accuse one another of sacrificing children. So, you know, these kind of accusations have been around for, you know, thousands of years, and unfortunately they persist even to this day with things like QAnon and those kind of conspiracy theories that, you know, the world's run by satanic Hollywood elites and celebrities that are torturing kids to suck the adrenochrome out of their brains,
make boots out of their skin and stuff. It's like,
so,
man, the whole QAnon thing, I need to get someone who believes in QAnon on here, but I don't think any of them would talk to me. But if you believe in QAnon, please email me. I would love to talk to you. I'd love to talk to you. So you mentioned earlier that I think you said it was like 5 or 6 years ago that you joined the Church of Satan, somewhere around there.
Four years ago.
Yeah, that's what it was. So before that, what did you consider yourself? Were you just an atheist, or, you know, were you some other religion?
So I considered myself an atheist for a really long time. So if I can kind of back up, you know, I was raised Christian Brethren, but not like hardcore. You know, we went to church when I was a little kid, but when there was kind of, I don't want to say scandal, but basically my parents ended up stopped going to church because, you know, they realized that the people in charge were kind of, you know, I think they realized kind of what a racket that church specifically
right was. Okay.
And we just never fell back into going. Okay. You know, but I was about as Christian as the average person for a very long time. And then when I kind of became a teenager, I started reading books about the witch trials, and that really kind of opened my eyes to, you know, kind of the horrible things that had been done in the name of religion, and that really disenfranchised me from Christianity. So gotcha. I, you know, read a bunch of literature about other religions and things like that, and was really drawn to the occult, because when I was a Christian, I was really fascinated by the devil and by demons, you know, but under the belief that they were, you know, literal beings.
Yeah.
But they still held that kind of fascination. So when I stopped being a Christian, I gravitated more towards the occult. You know, read all kind of things from Wicca to, you know, the books that Aleister Crowley wrote. And I just never really kind of got into it. It all seemed like a lot of work, you know. Having to do all this kind of practices and memorizing things and having a ritual chamber and robes and you know, and a lot of that stuff just to me seemed like so much gobbledygook, you know. I challenge anybody to kind of read Aleister Crowley and not come away being like, you know, what the hell is he getting at? Like, I don't get it. And then I was also a big metalhead. And I remember having this collection of Black Sabbath, this collection of Black Sabbath songs. And in the liner notes, it mentioned something about the first time Sabbath came to America being greeted by the Black Pope of the Church of Satan, which is not a true story. I think it's one of those, it's conflating like two different stories.
Gotcha. Okay. It's
misremembering,
right,
the part of whoever wrote that. But you know, that was, to me, that was really fascinating. It was like, there's a what? And then I remember too, around the same time, somebody had given my mom the book, She Said Yes, which was reportedly a biography of this one girl, I forget her name, but she was killed in the Columbine massacre.
Oh, okay.
And according to the book, which I believe was written by her mom, her daughter was this like big pothead Marilyn Manson fan before, you know, she found Jesus and turned her life around. And it, you know, of course it was talking about Marilyn Manson in there, and it brought up his affiliation with the Church of Satan, you know? So again, there was that, you know, that Church of Satan that came up and
right.
sounded, you know, very fascinating. So I ended up reading, reading the Satanic Bible. I think the first time that I bought it was just a bookstore in my local shopping mall. And I, you know, immediately in the first few pages was like, wow, this is so much different from, you know, anything else that you kind of read in the occult section. You know, this is something that's very down to earth. It's very practical. You know, it's much more like applied psychology than the kind of metaphysical, and I hate that term. I hate the way that gets abused by new age occultic folks. You know, it was just so much different than the kind of esoteric ramblings that you would usually get.
Gotcha.
So I immediately identified with the philosophy and, you know, had a tremendous amount of respect for Anton LaVey. But the thing, but you know, I was still kind of feeling out the other occult new age religions and everything. So when I went to college, I majored in psychology, which is like the most useless don't do it. You know, I'm just gonna warn you, just don't do it. You know, unless you are really committed to being a practicing therapist, or you know, you definitely want to go somewhere to be like a research psychologist. If you're not sure, pick a different major.
All anything. Those people listening that are studying psychology are cringing and busting their money back.
I'm just telling you what I wish someone would have told me. It is not a major that can apply to everything. They tell you that, it's a lie. But anyway, when I enrolled with that, I had this certain idea that I was going to take kind of all these occult concepts. And I was really big into Jung at the time. And if you know anything about Jung, he was really big into applying religion and in particular the alchemy, like the principles of alchemy, to his brand of psychoanalysis. And I thought that was just endlessly fascinating at the time. And I was convinced that's what I was going to do. And of course, you know, with your kind of undergrad psychology classes, you very quickly find out very few people today are practicing Freudians. Very few people today take Freud or Jung very seriously. You know, and they, instead the classes I had were kind of what psychology is kind of really about. You know, the idea of doing experimental psychology and statistics and really studying human behavior and human cognition and things like that. And that kind of upset everything and put me on a different path where I kind of looked at the, you know, looked at the stuff that I found that was super interesting and fascinating, and I no longer took it kind of literally. You know, to me, it was more so, you know, this is great art. This is great symbolism that has a useful function, but it's not really how the world works. So that's when I really started identifying as an atheist. So, you know, I went from something of a Christian to I don't really know, but the occult's really interesting, to atheist. And the only reason that I didn't kind of identify as a Satanist at that point was I really thought that to be a Satanist, you had to practice ritual, right? You know, because it's something that you read about a lot. And I was just like, I don't believe in that. I'm not, you know, like, I love everything else about this religion. You know, I identify with everything else about this religion, but that, you know, I can't get behind. So the current high priest of the Church of Satan, Peter Gilmore, had written kind of a follow-up book to the Satanic Bible. It was his book, The Satanic Scriptures. And unfortunately, when it first came out, I didn't get a chance to buy it, and it was out of print for a really long time. So I didn't buy it until many years later. And mm-hmm. when I was reading it, you know, there's a part in there where he talks about, you know, no, you don't have to practice ritual. You know, that's something that it should be up to the, you know, the individual Satanist. And I was like, oh, okay, well, all right, then I guess I'm a Satanist. And, you know, so it, you know, from there, it just absolutely, it clicked. And I was just like, you know, okay, that's what I am now.
Cool. Yeah. So the requirements for necessarily being a Satanist, I guess if I wanted to be a Satanist, what would be the best plan of action for me to understand Satanism and be able to call myself a Satanist? Should I start off with getting a LaVey, you know, book of Satanism, or you know, how should I go upon starting?
Well, we think that Satanists are born, not made.
Okay.
So if you read the Satanic Bible, and that's where you should start.
Okay.
If you read the Satanic Bible and you feel that it reflects who you are, you know, in the most fundamental sense, then, you know, maybe consider reading some more of LaVey's literature. He wrote a follow-up called The Satanic Rituals, which is all specifically talking about different rituals that you can practice. I would definitely recommend Magus Gilmore's The Satanic Scriptures. And pretty much that, if you want to call yourself a Satanist, that's pretty much all there is to it, is just seeing yourself reflected in the literature and acknowledging that that's who you are, or that's what you are.
Interesting.
You know, the one thing that really irks me is that it's become very trendy for people to want to identify as a Satanist and want to call themselves a Satanist because they think it means I oppose, you know, abortion bans. Right. I oppose, you know, Christian imposition in schools. And that's, you know, to me, that's, you totally have it wrong. That's not what it's about. You know, you can't call yourself belonging to a particular religion if you have no commitment to kind of the beliefs and the literature and, you know, the doctrine of it. You know, it's not like a hat. You can't just, or a uniform. You can't just put it on to kind of go out and make a statement, and then when you come home, you know, you take it off.
Gotcha. Okay. So it looks like after this call, I'm going to have to get myself the Satanist Bible, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, you can check out the official Church of Satan website too.
Yeah.
They have, you know, very helpful frequently asked questions, the page there. You know, there's all the kind of, the different print, you know, principles, if you want to call it that, you know, there's
yeah,
nine satanic sins, the satanic statements, you know, Yeah. It's a treasure trove of information for Satanism.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely gonna have to give it a read, because lately I've been on this kick of reading religious doctrines. Like, I just read the Bible for the second time, and I read the Quran not too long ago, and I'm working on the Book of Mormon right now. And so I just need to add it to my list of religious doctrines to quote. I guess I don't even know if I would call it a religious doctrine, but I don't know. Would you call it a religious doctrine?
I would think so. I don't think we have to kind of shy away from that.
Yeah.
You know, there's certainly dogma there, but it's nothing is ever presented as you need to take this on authority. You know, there's no sense of, I said this is so, therefore, you know, this is how it is. Yeah. You know, the kind of hallmark of Satanism is skepticism, is questioning, you know, and especially with something like ritual, you know, people are, you know, the Satanists are encouraged to kind of try it out for themselves and keep an open mind about it. You know, if it's something that works for you, you know, why not just use it? But, you know, if it doesn't do anything for you, that's okay too.
There you go. I guess with that, yeah, everyone pick up your you know, go check out the Church of Satan for sure, and check out the resources that they have, because I learned a lot on this conversation with you, JD, and I still have a lot more learning to go. I'm going to be picking up some of LaVey's work and, you know, reading some of that, and I'm going to check out the Church of Satan's website. But we're going to wrap it up for today here, but before we go, first of all, JD, thanks for coming on the show. I had an awesome conversation with you. Before we close out for today, feel free to plug any links of yours that you would like to plug, and anything that you would like me to put in the description of the podcast.
Sure. I just had a article put out today for my Devil in the Details column for Skeptical Inquirer, looking at the historical case of Gilles de Rais. Not sure if you're familiar with him.
Not familiar, no.
He comes up a lot on kind of lists for like the world's worst serial killers.
Okay.
So he was a war, he fought in the Hundred Years' War alongside Joan of Arc. He rose to the rank of Marshal of France. He was one of the richest, most powerful people in France at the time. But he, you know, when the war was over and he kind of returned to civilian life, he squandered the vast fortune that he had. And allegedly he turned to, you know, black magic and alchemy to try to get that fortune back. And he was arrested and accused of having murdered over, like 100 kids, variously, either for, you know, his own kind of perverted sexual deviant behavior, or to offer as a sacrifice to try to get that money back. And you know, the questions long kind of hung out there as to whether or not he was guilty, or was he the victim of a conspiracy,
like a blackmail or something.
Because, you know, and ultimately, I don't think we're ever going to be able to conclusively say, because there's just not a lot of evidence there.
Yeah, you know, it's a bit unfalsifiable. Yeah,
pretty much. You know, but the interesting thing is, when you really examine the case, you know, there was no physical evidence ever presented for his guilt. The people that were essentially his prosecutors were the ones that essentially retained control of his lands upon his imprisonment and execution. So there was definitely motive to suspect, you know,
that he
was innocent.
Interesting.
Falsely accused. So, you know, I think if we kind of weigh on the side of skepticism, we have to say it looks like it was a you know, he was done dirty. You know, the confessions that were presented in the case were under torture, or the threat of torture. So, you know, they're essentially worthless. And that's pretty much all that we have to go on.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm definitely going to have to take a listen to that.
Yeah.
I love me some good history, and that sounds super interesting.
Yeah, it's a very dark tale. I don't know. There's something about it that just endlessly, kind of like with Elizabeth Bathory, there's just something about it that's just so kind of gothic in its horror that it really attracts me.
Very cool. All right. Awesome. Anything else you'd like to plug?
I mean, if people want to check out my podcast, it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you know, pretty much anywhere you listen to your podcasts.
Heck yeah.
They can check out my column on skepticalinquirer.com. It's Devil in the Details, or you can search my name, JD Sword. I also write for AIPT Comics, where I kind of give a skeptical perspective on movies and TV shows that talk about exorcism, demonic possession, Satanism, things like that. Awesome. If anybody has any questions or wants to reach out to me, they can reach me on Facebook at Devil Details. My handle is The Satanic Skeptic.
There we go. And with that, that's the end of the show for today. JD, thanks so much for coming on again. This was an awesome talk, and hope to have you on again sometime.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Absolutely. Thank you.